Welcome to a new episode of Becoming a Post-Growth Planner, Obstacles and Challenges to Changing Roles and Practices. I am Christian Lamker, Assistant Professor at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. And for this episode, I have a special honor to welcome Anton Brokologa from Weimar, currently in the German state of Thuringia. And we've met many years back already at the origins of post-growth planning and the post-growth city, but we'll get back to that. For now, Anton, can you briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Christian, for having me here. My name is Anton. I'm working at the Chair for Urban Studies at Bauhaus University Weimar at the Faculty of Architecture and Urbanism. And I'm currently writing my, I'm finishing my PhD that is also dealing with the post-growth perspective on urban planning. And I'm doing a lot of university education lecture seminars on these topics, but also on others concerning methods and so on and so forth. Everything that is needed for becoming a planner. And we are actually working on the more social science perspective there. And besides that, I'm an activist. Since 6 years already, I'm an activist that is actually also part of urban politics here in the city of Weimar. So I'm part of the city council, part of the constructions and economics and environmental politics committee, and that's why I'm also more into the practical political aspects of the transformation of our cities. I think these are the two most important aspects to raise here.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we first met each other. I looked it up. It was early 2018
exactly.
When I did some work on post-growth planning in Germany and you on the post-growth city. And afterwards in 2019, you hosted a large conference on this topic. I would even say one of the first, the front runner in these debates, at least in the German context, if not beyond. And I remember vivid talks with researchers, activists, representatives of housing cooperatives, students. So quite a lot happening at this conference. But before that, what was your own key motivation to engage for an urban future beyond growth?
Yeah, thanks for this question. And I think that that's also one thing that you can see if you're watching this talk as a video, then you can see the posters that were actually distributed back then for this conference. And it was kind of the initial talks for many conversations that still go on. I think it was a great pleasure hosting this conference here in Weimar and having you and all the other researchers here. But a couple of months before, I was a master's student and was really into ecological and climate justice debates, and but also in this urban planning context. And I was actually wondering why there's such a huge gap. I did not really notice the gap in practice. I was really interested and more focused on university education in planning and in architecture. So the sustainability was partly accepted in these disciplines, but without considering global consequences of the modernization approach, of the green growth approach. And I was actually wondering why we are not focusing on bridging these two discourses on climate justice and degrowth and on planning, since we all consider planning a very important part of the metabolism of cities, of regions, and so on. And I was confronted by this gap, and I was just asking one of the professors if I could host a kind of student-led module back then in 2017 or 18, don't remember. And it was very successful and had many, many students that wanted to join. And this was, for me, one of the key motivations to engage further with this approach of looking at urban future developments beyond growth.
And now 5, 6, 7 years later, we see that there is at least quite a wider debate happening all over Europe and also beyond Europe. And that is certainly also due to those early seeds that have started to try out things, experiment and bring in thoughts and bring people together with their thoughts.
I
for
think
this.
I also want to acknowledge and then highlight that there were also other people, especially in doing political stuff, practical stuff, at the grassroots already in the 2010s that were actually trying to focus on this nexus. So I think we made it visible, and I think that's one part that science has to fulfill in a way, in my perspective, to make these things visible and discuss further developments and strategies. But yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that I think it was great also having these perspectives to settle on.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree that sometimes academia has the tendency to only see things if they are a book or a conference.
Exactly.
But indeed, there is much more happening, and that's also good to recognize. And there is still much more happening out there. For this talk, we have decided to focus a bit more on the other practice that you do, the experience in local politics, as you are part of the city council in Weimar, in the German state of Thuringia. A city with a long history in German democracy, also an area of Germany with strong urban-rural differences between the city and its surroundings. So I can imagine that also relates to a huge diversity of ideas, opinions, of struggles in urban politics in that city. Maybe you can take us first into what characterizes local urban politics and discussions in the city of Weimar.
Yeah, as you've said, it's a city in the state of Thuringia. It's a city with this history that we cannot talk about today, but just as a recommendation, maybe have a look at it. It's a very touristic place. So we have these touristic infrastructures here if you want to be our guest. But furthermore, I think what is most important here is that it's a medium-sized city. So it's not a mega city. It's a city of 66,000 inhabitants. And I think one of the interesting parts here is that we are confronted with stagnation or shrinkage right around Weimar. Actually, for the whole state of Thuringia, we are actually confronted with this shrinking tendencies happening, and also for the next decade it's actually calculated already. And so for Weimar, which is a university city and touristic place with this rich history, the development is not that too much focused on shrinkage. It's rather stagnating or small growth. But what I want to highlight here is that still with this stagnating population, we are confronted by political decisions and planning decisions that focus on further land consumption, on further land consumption for housing, but especially also for businesses and for urban developments at the outskirts. And this is one of the points that really comes to my mind, because this means that we really have to consider some of the growth dependencies that we are seeing here concerning the different layers. So it's not only that a certain population growth would actually trigger a certain land consumption, but that concerning economics, like the fiscal position of the city, the financial position of the city, the political images we have of a mayor that has the task of furthering the urban development with this just meant as a land consumption. So we have a multiple range that I'm confronted with doing this as a it's not part of any job, so I'm just doing it in the evenings. And two other things I just want to mention quickly. It's maintaining the status quo, and also for me, like really, for instance, in these committees, having a deep dive in these growth coalitions that are happening. So growth coalitions like between the mayor and the mayor major political blocks that are rather conservative. I'm part of the Green Left block, which is way smaller than the conservative ones. So here, I think first and foremost, more transparency is needed, more information, more education is needed, and it's really, really tough to really understand everything. And one last point here, sustainability as a matter of affordability. So most of the time when we speak about having a higher budget for sustainable cities, sustainable urban developments here, the first point that is raised by most of the departments, but also the political factions, is that we then need to establish more company, more places for companies, and so on and so forth. So these are some general tendencies that I can observe here live.
Yeah, thank you. So certainly democracy lives from voluntary engagement from people organizing themselves locally. But in these debates, do you recognize that concepts that are discussed in post-growth debates, for example, sufficiency, the good life, or also solidarity, play a key role, or are they pushed aside? Or maybe do you have an example for that in terms of land consumption or another recent debate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's dealt with only superficially, all these concepts that we were talking about in this conference, and also the conferences that came later. It's some of the like real difficulties for me in sitting, for instance, in the construction committee. Then there are many lay citizens that are volunteers there, and it's quite nice to have someone from an enterprise there, and someone who is working as a plumber, having the mandate there, and sitting there and taking this responsibility for the communities. But on the other hand, I'm confronted with a lot of fake news, for instance, on urban retrofitting. So, for instance, when I'm arguing for not dismantling so many buildings in the city, which is actually a huge part of the architecture debate already, the many other politicians, and even from architectural office that are part of the debate, or even people from the planning departments are saying, no, we need to have new buildings that are then more sustainable. And so I would actually love to have more in-depth conversations, but there's no time, and there's a lack of information, a lack of credible information, that I'm experiencing here. For instance, with this retrofitting versus dismantling approach.
Is that a lack of information background as such, or what are challenges also in terms of communication of contradictory ideas, or a lack of convincing different future vision or future idea what to do beyond dismantling and building something new?
Yeah, I would say it's both. What I actually miss somehow is a more in-depth communicative approach between initiatives that are there on the ground everywhere. You will find it in every small village and every small town, and also here. And like really to look at the points of intervention that are possible in this processes. We will definitely see this kind of participation paradox, so that the more we are in the planning process, and the more we have decided already, the more participation is asked. But on the other hand, we would actually need more participation right in the beginning. If we are speaking about how do we want to develop this city further, it's something that is really bureaucratic. And I think there is a need of systemic change in a way, so to have a more participatory and transparent approach, but also to engage people more. So just to raise one quick idea here, is that I'm really starting to go to schools to speak about this as part of political education, as part of geography education as part of even a technical aspect. So how do we want to live in this city in 20 years is something that requires a lot of education, of a lot of knowledge. And I'm trying to give some insights also through broadcasting stuff, through channels and social media. But on the other hand, speaking about growth coalitions, of course, the power that comes with access to municipal resources, the newspapers, the media coverage is way bigger for the huge projects that are taking more and more land. For instance, yeah.
If you go to schools, to younger people, to public debates outside of the political sphere, outside of the university, do you recognize alternatives, ideas that are somewhere popping up, or visions that are anchored and not that outspoken in the in other spheres?
Yeah, definitely. That's why I'm going there. So to have some perspectives and to have some optimism there, I think we are also kind of confronted at the moment with this huge rollback. We have seen the climate emergency and Fridays for Future mobilizing and getting together many ideas for sustainability, many people and broad coalitions also in different cities. But we need to have a look at the certain perspectives today, and many people are, yeah, confronted with this rollback. And so I think what's most inspiring still is looking at sustainability and democracy at the same time. So as you may have heard, we have a like also a huge right-wing faction here in the state of Thuringia, and the shift to a racist and authoritarian politics is visible here, as in other parts of Europe too, I guess. But it's really looking for and engaging with local democracies also at the quarters, so not only looking at the urban level and the city-wide level, but looking into the quarter, looking at quarter councils, looking at the and how to engage with students and pupils also. And I think one last point I want to mention is just always moving or we'll perish. I think like-minded people searching for them on the community level, on the city level, but also connecting translocally is more and more needed. So we may not find ways for a global transformation at the moment, but having these local experiments always in connection with each other is some of the crucial points I learned.
Yeah, I agree. It's good to think about optimism and also to take action. If I look into social media, I recognize that you are very active in on many different fields, which I find really amazing. But when I look at today's situation all over Europe and beyond, democracy is unfortunately not or no longer a stable given. So even in Central Europe, we witness strong anti-democratic tendencies, leading people to see the future more as going back to some imagined golden past, or as something that can no longer be positively shaped by our actions. I think you've said that you do a lot of things that you want to shape a positive future, that you see optimism also when going to schools and out in the public. What makes you confident to engage in local democracy in particular for a post-growth future?
Yeah, I think it's seeing and being part of this communities that are that are showing pathways and really looking at the different strategies and how we can connect them. And I think there are multiple of examples of where exactly this connection of like the small scale interventions, the architectural solutions can be connected to a broader scale approach, looking at the symbiotical parts and also going into city councils and in the end, also working together with social movements, or at least looking at them at what they are at the moment standing for. And I think what's most important here is to look for connections that you are trusting, for the people that you keep trust in, and that we establish these connections in between communities and between cities, and not only on a scientific level, and neither on a municipal level, but also connecting the dots also on this civil society, social movement layer to shape a future that we want to live in.
Thank you. Yeah, democracy is much more than going to elections or being an elected politician. So looking a bit beyond that, beyond elections, how can any other citizen, civil society, so how can basically all of us be more supportive, more constructive in future-oriented democratic discussions about questions in planning, but can also be beyond planning?
I think one of the most important aspects I want to raise here is that we have to be aware of the fact that the democracy is under fire, is under threat. But at the same time, we should not be too defensive on our way of dealing with things in a democratic way. So let's make use of the current situation and really think of new ways, especially when we consider local democracy. We can see through many researchers from the 80s, from 70s, 80s in the US and later also in Europe, this growth coalition aspect. So like that is inscribed into urban politics in a way. Let's change that. Let's try to make new ways of dealing with political perspectives and strategies. So let's find ways how to educate planners in ways that they are also dealing with civil society aspects that are raised. Let's also face the aspect that intermediaries are needed. So we definitely need platforms, we need the connections, we need agencies between municipalities and civil society actors, because they are different languages. And maybe that's also fine. We should think about this aspect of different languages too, but maybe it's also like really needed to found new agencies that are trying to kind of mediate between the different actors. And I'm not speaking about public private partnerships, but more of public civic partnerships. I think that's one of the aspects that is really, really important. And I'm really optimistic that we will have this in a future-oriented democratic perspective.
Yeah, and that research and education play a crucial role to find ideas and solutions, but maybe even more as a platform for having debates, for thinking critically about options.
Yes.
Where would you anchor or see our role as researchers and educators, also working at universities, dealing with students, with research projects, with publications, and let's say our language and daily business?
Yeah, I think some points were raised already in our conversation here. I think highlighting the persons and initiatives that are already looking at the challenges, finding solutions for them should be an integral part of university education. So like really at the moment I'm doing a lot of teaching at our faculty with the challenges in a very peripheral a shrinking region, the Thuringian Forest. And having these perspectives also and integrating them into our disciplinary debates is very relevant, I think. Then the other aspect, I think it was also mentioned, but to stress it again, like really looking at the planning processes, at the urban land use planning and so on, and mobility planning, and having them integrated in political education on the school level, but also an adult education. Because it's not trivial. It's really important to empower people to actually identify the points of intervention that are possible in the existing system. I don't really want to spend all my time on speaking about future systems, really looking also at the perspectives and the possibilities that are po there at the moment. And trying to really politicize the sustainability debate in planning, in geography, in political science again.
Yeah, I totally agree. Also, that's my approach to post-growth planning, not falling back in despair and saying there is actually nothing to do
Yes.
because it's too much, too complex. It's just a forest of deep idea, deep thoughts that are no have don't have an entry point. And I certainly think it should be and the way to find entry points, and there are entry points to start basically immediately. Listening also to what you say and what you experience, that there is source for optimism. There is source for working together, but it needs a bit more than what we've done maybe in the previous.
Yeah, definitely. And I think collecting knowledge and disseminating, distributing it is very relevant. I'm trying to do it for German-speaking people with postwachstumsstadt.de, but I think your job is also great, Christian, for post-growth planning. Thanks a lot.
This is not yet the end, but it moves to the very final sentence that we usually ask at the very end of every episode of this podcast to finish the sentence, post-growth planning is, and to give us or share your definition of post-growth planning with our podcast audience. Therefore, this is the call for you to finish the sentence.
Post-growth planning is realizing the good life for all within planetary boundaries.
Thanks a lot, Anton, and many warm regards to Thuringia, to Weimar, and good luck and all the best for your work in the coming years, decades. There's so much more future and optimism needed and to come.
Thanks, Christian, for having me. Wishing you the same.
Thank you.